is Michael McCusker. Happy day after Christmas 2024. My New Year's wish for 2025 is that the American people will democratically neutralize the venomous return to the presidency of the nation's neurotic Nero, Donald Trump, who truly believes he now has the power to imprison and order the death penalty of democracy and reign as czar of Trumptocracy, or Trump America. The USA is not a kleptocracy, nor an autocracy. It is a democracy, which is very different, with clearly pluralistic needs and responsibilities. It is an idealistically and often realistically open and free-thinking society in design, which is contrary to the elitism of wealth and corrupt power. A democracy, in other words, is a government of presumed equals, which even the infamous Robespierre considered as a state in which the people are sovereign, guided by laws of its own making, does for itself all it can do, and by its delegates all it cannot. And that was Robespierre. The implicit danger of Trump's continuance reaches far beyond USA boundaries of geography, but also of time. The irreversible eradication of biological life, if human pollution is allowed to continue virtually unabated for perhaps no other purpose than the privilege of a generation at the expense of future generations. Trump, at this vital moment, is the pivot point. And so, in her own unique and much quieter way, is Greta Thunberg, who continues to mobilize younger human generations, the so-called millennials, who will occupy Earth's future and perhaps preserve its biological life. We have been affixed to Trump as though hypnotically frozen on a track, helpless to jump away from an oncoming train. I start today's program with a quote attributed to the Roman dictator Caligula explaining Trump's fixation on executive privilege. "Remember, I can do anything to anybody," quote, unquote. And now, something I wrote, which I generally read at this time of year. "O come all ye faithful." Christmas, that annual pagan holiday appropriated from the followers of Odin, is a time for feast and fellowship, a convivial warmth against the cold winter ahead. It is a parochial celebration that affirms a civic Christianity as the national religion, although the nation is the uneasy host for every conceivable form of theology. Usually, the public piety is casual, indifferently observed, but occasionally the Puritan past clamors for power, generally during periods of disruption and confusion, such as the present, when political ideologies imprint a grim, intolerant, and despotic orthodoxy upon constitutional law. It might yet be difficult to accept willful ignorance and evangelical vengeance as the center of political direction and intellectual discourse, but the anguish that underlies American culture is a schizophrenia unable to resolve material greed with spiritual piety. The political tolerance for a variety of religions that is assured in the nation's laws is probably due more to an awareness that no one sect has been powerful enough to rule over the others. And just to be sure, religion is not allowed to directly interfere with government except as inspiration and manifest destiny. The practical consequence of separation of church and state has to been protect each from the other. by its own law, the government cannot and should not enforce or impose any manner of worship or religion upon its citizens or any others who live in this country. It cannot attempt to regulate or interfere with religion or anyone's choice of worship or choice not to. The current debate about church and state is less about religion than it is a dichotomy of political values between those who would impose a narrow doctrine of absolutes that are not to be questioned or resisted, only obeyed, and those who believe that everyone has the right and obligation to choose their own beliefs about what is right and wrong. If the United States adopted or was forced to accept a single religion distinct from a loosely defined public creed, other religions would be purged, in particular those that are not Christian. Races other than white would lose all of their already minimal civil rights. Women would be shoved back into second-class status, and most democratic freedoms would soon be suspended. The course of the current intrusion into politics by the religious right is less to glorify God than to manipulate religion as a conduit to political power and conversion of the government into a militant theocracy. If the religious conservatives who are clamoring for absolute control of the government succeed in changing the nation into an ecclesiastical state, the result would be perpetual inquisition and religious war. As precarious and brief as has been the history of political liberty, its only real opponent is the people's belief in a divine deity and their fear they might be immortal. Religion serves as handmaiden to political rule. From the beginning of history, humanity has evolved religions to explain life and its possible place within it, and always there has been the desire that life not end at the crypt. Religion has thus been a political instrument in every society, at once a source of philosophical inquiry and a political doctrine of identity and rule. By the very nature of the fear that produced it, religion is authoritarian and exacts servitude from its followers. The hope for life after life has served secular government. The misery of life can be borne steadfastly and in service to life's oppressors by the promise of rewards beyond earthly life, which is not necessary to prove. The dilemma of where we rank in the cosmos has been narrowed considerably to serve the ambitions of a very few who paradoxically seem to reap all earthly rewards for the pious suppression of their followers and subjects. It is double-edged. The use of religion for purposes of rule makes it essential to both regulate religion and inflict its doctrines upon government. The state supplants God, but belief in God is necessary to support the state. Nationalism is itself a virulent form of religion, but its major disadvantage is that it cannot promise life after death. Great masses of citizens believe that the nation is an extension of divine rule, however, or is an acceptable substitute. They proclaim the same fervor toward a flag as toward a deity, and often confuse them. American religious conservatives used to think the conflict between the United States and the Soviet Union, righteously denounced as the evil empire, was the classical final confrontation between good and evil, and would, through the use of nuclear weapons, result in the end of Earth. Now they must find other apocalyptic struggles between God and anti-God. And they seem to be focused culturally inward at gay people, assertive women, and third world immigrants who transport alien gods to these shores. The Christian conservative backlash is not simply the perception of the disintegration of society as the result of the deterioration of spiritual values, but what they also perceive as a war against religion by the government, which in reality generally accommodates religious beliefs unless arguments against are compelling. Religious fundamentalists are rarely accommodating, but instead exhibit malevolent contempt for dissent and refuse to accept that people who think differently might be sincere and even noble in their points of view. True believers put a rather low priority on mortal life, which is only a process of mortification and putrescence to the rigorously faithful. They profess a distaste for life and secular knowledge. They despise what is known as humanism, which is simply an ethical and compassionate responsibility for being human, but which is reviled as permissive heresy. They believe that all who claim to be Christian must support every activity that fulfills biblical prophecy, even if it destroys the rest of us. This, of course, would be the desired Armageddon and selection of souls. Good and evil would both be destroyed with the end of earth, but good would return with the reappearance of Jesus Christ. Earth would be resurrected and repopulated with the souls of the faithful, who would dwell for eternity in the joy they eschewed in life. Everyone would have to die for nirvana to be realized, and everything Homo civilis has spent millennia to construct. It is ironic that the most grim, unbending, intolerant, and ignorant are unshakably certain that only they are beloved by God. It is perhaps more ironic that one would have to willfully participate in the murder of life to be worthy of living forever. Most religions are preoccupied with death, with shades and shadows, and with few exceptions, they share apocalyptic visions of the end of earth. A wonderful yearning of spirit and intellect is distorted into oppressive sets of scripture that stifle the inquiry that originated religions. Questions are bent into rigid answers that must not be questioned. All religions demand their followers suspend the progress of knowledge and that nothing pertaining to theological doctrine be advanced beyond the period in which a particular religion was founded. Mythologies developed hundreds or thousands of years ago are taught as absolute certainties, and subsequent learning is dismissed as heretical. A distinction must be made between religion and spirituality. An atheist can be profoundly spiritual, while the religious follower might only be so because of social pressures, ambition, or as a result of fear, which is a greater draw to the pew than the boilerplated love of God. One does not have to prostrate before a disinterested deity to be moral. Morality is the conscience of humanistic behavior. In that sense, most religions have seldom acted morally. And in this present era of inquisitionary fervor, the political intent of religion is immoral. The issue of church and state is much more serious than the tiresome ambitions and subversions of zealots and despots. Separation of church and state embodies all other disputes, ethnic, religious, racial, and gender, which have resulted in civil wars elsewhere in the world, but are so far contained within the normal but very strained framework of American politics. Yet the middle ground of civility and reasonability is disappearing. Comparable to the slavery issue that preoccupied the first half of the 19th century, no matter how many compromises are erected to stall or prevent the outbreak of civil war, the confrontation between religious or secular secular dominance of the government seems to inevitably await solution in violence. And that was something I wrote, O Come All Ye Faithful, and which I have read virtually this time of year on this program for quite a number of years. And now, I'd like to read something again I wrote, The Four Freedoms. Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave the annual State of the Union message in early 1941, the same year the USA was catapulted into World War II by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, and also the year of my birth. His speech is called the Four Freedoms Speech. Although he had expected that the United States soon would be at war against Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, FDR's proclamation of the Four Freedoms had absolutely nothing to do with Fortress America or fervid nationalism. They were universal. The world as a neighborhood after the fascists and imperialists were defeated. The Four Freedoms, as he succinctly articulated, were and remain: first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. Second is freedom of every person to worship God in his or her own way everywhere in the world. Third, freedom from want, which means economic understanding, which will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. Fourth is freedom from fear, which translated into world terms means a worldwide reduction of armaments to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor anywhere in the world. That is no vision of a distant millennium, President Roosevelt said. It is a definite basis for a kind of world attainable in our own time and generation. That kind of world is the very antithesis of the so-called new order of tyranny dictators seek to create with the crash of a bomb, Roosevelt said. Roosevelt did not live long enough to see his vision fail, although his great work toward creating the United Nations came to fruition and continues to exist into this new millennium, a quarter of a century now. He died just before World War II ended at the beginning of his fourth term as president. 3 years later, Eleanor Roosevelt, who thought her public work ended with FDR's death, chaired the United Nations Committee that produced the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights on December 10, 1948. Eleanor Roosevelt wrote in commemoration of human rights that a new world was born after the use of the atomic bomb in World War II, a world in which we have to learn to live in friendship with our neighbors of every race, creed, and color, or do away with civilization, she said. Shortly before his death on April 12, 1945, FDR wrote a speech that was never delivered. In that speech, he planned to say, "Today we are faced with the preeminent fact that if civilization is to survive, we must cultivate the science of human relationships, the ability of all peoples of all kinds to live together and work together in the same world at peace," quote unquote. The peace that ensued after the end of World War II that year was a half-century period known as either the Cold War or the nuclear arms race between the two major allies, the USSR and USA. And it is fortunate that we have not yet blown this planet apart. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. Donald Trump has been rewarded for his attempt to overthrow the American government by being reelected as president. And it would appear that Trump is an avid student of Mein Kampf, written by an earlier advocate of political upheaval and supreme power. He is not even waiting for his inauguration to begin his fascist-inspired takeover of American democracy. Trump has been rewarded for his undisguised and rather blatant attempt to eradicate democracy by being reelected as president by voters who seem to relish autocracy. What other explanation might be offered, except, of course, a prejudice against a woman president? Trump has put the USA in double jeopardy. First and foremost will be his personal goal of being the USA's Reichmaster, or Der Führer. The second is the stench his presidency will cause most of the rest of the world to avert his sensitivities for American dominance in world affairs. Americans might be advised to take the trouble to memorize the Bill of Rights. Happy New Year.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.